The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
This is the Brad Sessmatt Show, and I am not Brad Sessmatt. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy today. We have a lot of really good stuff to get to. College football insider Brad Edwards is going to be joining Brad here in just a little bit, talking all things ASU, college football playoff. They cover a lot of ground in this one, and it's a busy time of year, even though games aren't being played in college football right now. Plenty of bowl games to preview, plenty of awards to look back upon, and just kind of the landscape of where ASU and U of A are. NFL Network senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano, it is crunch time, guys. You are in the postseason, most likely, or you're not, and you're not playing. But Michael Fabiano will answer your questions. You have questions. He has a bunch of answers, and usually he's pretty right. We also have Talk to the Lopes. GCU men's soccer coach Shellis Hindman also joins Brad, and they break down the Lopes season so far. So a lot to get to, but let's start things off with our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most, and it is a big day for the Phoenix Suns. Right now, Today, Phoenix City Council will be holding their vote on renovations for Talking Stick Resort Arena. It'll be $238 million worth of renovations. Phoenix will pay $150 million of those. The Suns would kick in $80 million. And then there are also some other funds that Phoenix would need to add to over the course of 12 and a half years that would total to about $50 million for continued renovations. So the vote is going on with that. That's happening today. When you look at what the public has had to say, it's a very small poll. It's about 450 Phoenix voters. 65% of those voters said no. And I think the sense of urgency to get this going is because for Phoenix Mayor Katie Gallego is the front runner for this runoff election that they'll have in the spring about who will take over as Phoenix mayor. And she has been very outspoken that there are other needs within the city other than Phoenix Suns renovations at Talking Stick Resort Arena. So they're really trying to push this through. And I think that's a key to know that. So a lot of these questions are left to still be unanswered. And that's I think that's why there's so much kind of discourse and opposition to this. Right now, if they don't approve this, the Suns could walk away from that agreement and starting in 2022 and move somewhere else within Arizona or elsewhere. They could look at greener pastures outside of Arizona. Now, personally, I think Arizona needs to have the four major sports within their state and then some. When you look at Phoenix Rising, when you look at the Arizona Hotshots, Arizona is a great sports state. And Phoenix is a great sports city. And obviously, I think all of us want to have those four majors in there to really show what Arizona can offer as a sports town. But it seems like with this fan base right now, it's not as much anger, not as much frustration. I think it's starting to get to apathy. And I think that that's why there's so much opposition for this right now. But obviously, a ton to look towards as the day progresses and this vote happens. So a lot to get to with that. On the Diamondbacks front, let's all decompress. We're a week removed from Paul Goldschmidt getting traded to St. Louis. And looking at this deal, I think my opinion kind of remains the same. This deal needed to happen. And when you're dealing a superstar like Paul Goldschmidt, you're not going to get the immediate return that he warrants. And that's just the name of the game right now. But Paul Goldschmidt, more than likely, I think, would have gone to another team a year from now. So you don't get anything for him because the club had a very favorable deal with him over the past couple of years, and they weren't able to make it work. They made the postseason once, wasn't able to get to that World Series. And I think Mike Hazen looked at it pretty objectively and said, we can get something for a superstar right now. Let's go ahead and do that. I think this deal's going to hinge on Luke Weaver. He's the pitcher that is coming back. He's going to be a part of the rotation. They've already said that he's a part of that rotation. And I think the key with him is in 2017, he was very good. Coming up in a somewhat limited role for the Cardinals. He looked like he could be, a 1-2-3 starter for the Cardinals for years to come. 2018, he was very average. if he can become that 1-2-3 starter, and the Diamondbacks have quite a few years of control for him and Carson Kelly, then all of a sudden you have a starting battery that's going to be pretty darn good and develop into their primes. You're dealing one of the best players in baseball, so you're not going to get that immediate return you want, but they are getting something in return, and I think the initial outcry towards it, I think the Diamondbacks did a pretty good job getting back some young talent. I think the key also is going to be Carson Kelly, who, granted, it was one conversation, but listening to him talk about Luke Weaver, it seems like they have a very good relationship, and it seems like he does a good job calming down Luke Weaver when he gets a little sporadic as a young pitcher. But both of them took a step back last year early in their careers, and I think a new setting could help them kind of take those next couple of steps within their careers. Jackie Bradley Jr., the Boston Red Sox center fielder, has been linked to the Diamondbacks. There are reports coming out that the Diamondbacks were looking at him pretty hard to potentially replace A.J. Pollock should he not sign with the Diamondbacks. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Jackie Bradley Jr. would be a great addition. I don't really like the idea of having Ketel Marte move out there because he's a young player who's still getting his feet under him. He played multiple positions 2 years ago. They kind of keyed in on him being that second baseman, and I think we kind of started to see him grow a little bit. Having that position versatility will be very helpful, but I think let him handle being a starting second baseman for multiple years. Let him grow. If you can get Jackie Bradley Jr., not give up too much, I think that that's a great move because defensively he brings so much. He's comparable to A.J. Pollock, so then you would have Steven Souza in right field, Jackie Bradley Jr. in center, and David Peralta in left. You still have a very good defensive outfield that can save some runs. There was his offense was left there was a lot to be desired in the past couple of years, but he has shown he can be that 270, 280 hitter. So I think that he could be a great addition. Again, it all depends on the package that the Diamondbacks were able to send over, but something to look out for as we continue through winter meetings and this MLB offseason. Coming up next, Brad is joined by ESPN college football insider Brad Edwards on the Brad Sesmat Show.
A reminder, we'll be in Las Vegas starting on Thursday night, and we will be a part of Arizona State and Fresno State doing coverage up there, Sports 360 AZ, and of course, our television show, Brad Sesmat Football AZ. Mike Norvell's name is in the news today. The former Sun Devil is now reportedly one of three for the Kansas State job. So that's good news for Mike, as he's done a good job over there at Memphis after leaving Todd Graham's staff. Let's turn our attention for a couple of minutes to Arizona State, getting ready for Fresno State and college football as we put a bow on 2018, U of A as well. Brad Edwards, always good to have Brad with us, ESPN college football insider, good friend of the show, a national perspective, joining us here on the program. From a year ago to today, Brad, when Kevin Sumlin and Herm Edwards were hired, did it work out in year one as you expected it to for the Sun Devils and Wildcats?
I would say certainly it didn't for the Wildcats. I mean, given Khalil Tate being there already, I think a lot of people felt like it was a great fit with Sumlin, and I think it's fair to say that most of the country, if not more specifically the Pac-12, was expecting greater things out of UA this year. But, obviously a head coach is going to be judged on what he's doing in year three and year four, not in year one. So we'll see where someone goes from here. On the Arizona State front, there was so much negativity about the Herm Edwards hire that I think that anything other than a disastrous season was going to be better than people were making it out to be. And I don't know what the reaction was locally, but nationally, I felt like that was the way that it was kind of spun, which is like, this is a ridiculous hire. People were scratching their heads. Why are they doing this? And I think all things considered, especially when you look at how close some of the losses were for ASU, it was a better season than people expected. And obviously the game when they played each other gave us everything we've come to expect from that rivalry, which is complete unpredictability and insanity. And so that was just kind of my take on what happened out there this year.
Brad Edwards with us. So Arizona State, Fresno State is not going to headline a lot of sportscasts and a lot of shows, but I think on the surface, it's a pretty darn good matchup. You know, look at Fresno State and the job that was done there and getting that program turned around, and then Herm getting his team there. You have a thought on the matchup this Saturday in Vegas?
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun game. Fresno is a team that I don't think has gotten the attention that they should have gotten nationally, partly because of UCF being up there as the most publicized team out of the group of five. And then partly because Fresno State didn't take care of its own business when it had a chance in the second half to win at Boise State the first time they played there. And so if those things hadn't been in place, then who knows how much more people would be aware of Fresno. But they are a legit top 25 team. You know, it's not that uncommon for a group of five teams with high win totals to eventually get into the top 25 late in the year. You always see that happen because voters, you know, don't want to rank a four or five loss team from a Power Five league.
Right.
But it is rare to see group of five teams get into the top 25 of some of our metrics. And Fresno has been considered a top 25 team by FPI for pretty much the second half of the season. They've been up there. And so I think this is a really good team. Their strength is on defense, as I'm sure you're aware. They're a pretty good offensive team, but I think they're really good on defense and up against what I think is a pretty good offense that ASU has. It should be a fun matchup.
Talking with Brad Edwards. So the age thing in this game, I say thing loosely, Jeff Tedford's 57, Herm's in his 60s. You see Mac Brown go to North Carolina. Brad, are we seeing the pendulum swing a direction of, we don't need the hot young assistant coach, let's go find the veteran guy and see if they can get it turned around in the right direction? Rocky Long at San Diego State's a guy who comes to my mind as well. What do you make out of the age of these coaches that are now running the sidelines, and is it a new trend, a good trend?
Yeah, I'm not really sure if I buy into it as a trend yet. There's no question that there are quite a few names that you would be able to roll off. When you start looking at it, I think there are kind of unique circumstances in a lot of these situations. Arizona State and Kansas State were, excuse me, Kansas, Arizona State and Kansas were, yep, both situations where the, you know, one of the people very instrumental in making the hire had a degree of familiarity with the coach and a degree of comfort with him, and so went in that direction. And then obviously with North Carolina, I think within the board, a lot of the big money guys, maybe not even the board, but the boosters, they had a lot of familiarity with Mac Brown because he had been the coach there before. So I think some of that is at work. And so it's not really something I see as a trend. I think it's almost an anomaly. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how these guys all pan out, because I can tell you pretty much man for man, there's been a great deal of pessimism about these hires, and we'll see if one of them can end up rising well above the expectations.
A couple other questions, we'll let you go. Your reaction on the Heisman and how it played out?
Yeah, I would say that that was my expectation after the way that the regular season ended on Championship Saturday, was that Kyler Murray would win. And as great of a season as Tua had at Alabama, the reality is Kyler Murray played so well week after week that he never gave him a cushion. Mm-hmm. He never had enough room, a margin for error, you know, where he could have a bad game like he had in the SEC Championship. And I think Kyler Murray was very deserving of winning it, and it's going to be fun to see him up against the Alabama defense in the Orange Bowl.
And how do you make the CFP work from your view? Four teams now to eight. Just look at this year. Two-prong question. You look at these final four teams, and then are you in that mindset of, guys, let's get on to expansion here?
I'm not yet. I mean, I don't think I would mind seeing an 18 playoff. There's some things about it that I would enjoy. But I'm not opposed to four teams either. I think really the biggest issue that people have with the four teams, whether they want to admit it or whether they even realize it, is that it seems to be the same teams over and over.
Right. Yes.
And that's why it's the same conferences over and over, is because it's the same teams. It's because Alabama's there every year. Clemson has been there every year since the first one. And then Oklahoma now, what, three times out of the last 4 years. And all four of these years, all five of these years, Ohio State, when they haven't gotten in, they've been right there on the edge as you know, almost the next team out. And so I think people just get tired of watching the same teams over and over. And I think that's why they want to see more teams in the field. It's because they want to see more teams on the field. You know, they want to see different uniforms out there playing for the national championship. And I get that. Look, at some point, Nick Saban is going to retire, and Alabama won't be there every year anymore, and they'll probably be replaced by someone else in the SEC, but eventually the names are going to change.
Where are we at with the Pac-12 nationally? Because it seems like every week there's something coming out that is not good. It doesn't matter if it's refereeing or Mike Leach criticizing the conference. On the basketball side, they've really struggled. They're not a part of the playoff. Larry Scott's under siege. There's no DirecTV deals still. Where's the Pac-12 viewed nationally, and is it a crisis mode from your view?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that it's now clearly the fifth of the Power Five. Now, I don't think it's, you know, close to, I guess, the American, which you'd look at as the best of outside of the Power Five. It's still, there's still separation there, and part of that's because of the money. But yeah, there is a crisis, in my opinion. I mean, just look at the product in the two most important sports, you know, football and men's basketball, and it's not what it needs to be. I mean, this is the second year in a row that they haven't really been good on the football side, or at least, you know, good enough to really seriously contend for the national championship. And I don't know what the answer is. You know, I don't know how you, you know, I don't know if it's a chicken or the egg thing as far as getting the other problems first before the teams can get better on the field. I just know they need to get better on the field. And I don't know what that next step is. I think it certainly will help if they can get a win that would change perception somewhat. And those wins are only going to come against top 10 opponents, and those games are typically just going to come in the bowl season and then in September. And in the bowls, it's really just the Rose Bowl, the only opportunity that I see. So I think Washington could do a little bit if they can beat Ohio State, but outside of that, it's going to have to wait till next year. And like I said, it's only going to be accomplished by going out and beating good teams from other leagues.
As always, I appreciate your time and your insight on all things across the plane of college football. Brad, thanks.
Thank you, Brad. Take care.
It's Brad Edwards with us, ESPN, college football insider and analyst. Good stuff there. It is crisis mode for the Pac-12. It is. I mean, even in Arizona State's case, if you lose to Fresno State, that's a black eye towards the conference. Every team that is in a bowl game, and I understand N'Keal Harry's not playing. I get that. And that's a big blow for ASU. I agree with N'Keal not playing. But you got to find ways to win games against teams that are not of a bigger conference. This would be a setback if it comes up short for the Sun Devils this coming Saturday. We talk about GCU basketball on the other side and what they did downtown on Monday. That's next. Time now for Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, NFL Network and NFL.com. We have people sending entire lineups to us because now it's playoffs. So we're not going to go through every single lineup, but I want to just get right into Chiefs-Chargers off the top because a lot of questions involve what's going on with both those teams and running backs and injuries. So let's just get right into it, my friend.
Right. So our Steve Weiss is suggesting that Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler will both be unlikely to play in this game. So if you have yet to add Justin Jackson or put in a claim for him, you need to do it like now because it's very rare that a number one running back, which is what Jackson would be, in a dynamic offense is ever available on the waiver wire in week 15. And the matchup is very good against the Chiefs. So suddenly Justin Jackson goes from a guy who was barely on the fantasy radar 4 weeks ago to someone who is now maybe not a must start, but a pretty darn good start against Kansas City.
And then on the Chiefs side with Spencer Ware and Tyreek Hill and injuries.
So right now, Spencer Ware, I would consider him to be questionable, not practicing today. What does that mean? Damian Williams needs to be also picked up off the waiver wire. If you've got priority, would go to Jackson, but Williams is a very close second. So, again, very odd to see a player like Jackson and now someone like Williams, who would become the starter if Ware were out, two guys who you could put right into your lineups for the second week of the fantasy playoffs. In terms of Tyreek Hill, I know there's reports that he's got a foot injury, and he told Peter King that it was, quote, bad. But it would be hard for me to see a scenario where Tyreek Hill is not out there on the gridiron. It would have to be a really bad injury, because this is a huge game for both teams.
Right. The Hall of Famer, let's get right into it with Michael Fabiano. Mariota or Winston at quarterback this week from Ralph?
That is a tough call, and it's so tough, in fact, that I would tell you to pick up Josh Allen and play him. Mm. If you can't get him, then I would go with Mariota. Neither matchup is great, but there is nothing about Jameis Winston playing in Baltimore that I like. Nothing. That defense is really tough, especially on their home field, so I'd be fading Winston if possible.
Doug Martin, Chris Carson, and Michelle, two of the three.
Believe it or not, I'd be benching Michelle out of those three. Martin's playing the Bengals. Their defense is terrible. Mm-hmm. Every single week, running backs are putting up good numbers against them. Carson, surprisingly, had a very good stat line against the Vikings last night. Michelle basically has been in a timeshare. James White, although his snaps have decreased over the last four or five games, he's still in the mix. They're giving James Devlin the football near the goal line. Belichick is back in New England. And the matchup also is not that great either against the Steelers.
Derek Carr or Josh Allen this week?
What? Josh Allen. And it's odd to hear Derek Carr's name listed, but he's got a really good matchup against Cincinnati. I don't trust him in the fantasy playoffs, and I wouldn't if I could find an alternative. And here's a stat on Josh Allen, which is unreal. And we've been doing this for years, right? You know, every time there is a quarterback who can run with the football, he's going to have some value from a fantasy perspective. Josh Allen has rushed for 335 combined yards in his last three games. That's the most rushing yards by a quarterback in a three-game span since 1970. So he is, and in terms of his ability to throw the football, we know he's got a hand cannon, but he turns the ball over a ton. He had three turnovers last week, but it doesn't hurt him that much because he's giving you 100 yards on the ground every single week. So suddenly Josh Allen, believe it or not, is a very startable asset. Why? Because of what he can do as a runner.
Okay, let's flip this around, Michael. And last week you used the term don't get too cute with the playoffs. I'm getting a lot of questions today for you on Rams players because have they taken the pedal off the overdrive with playoffs in sight? Some fans are saying, what do we do here with Gurley and Goff? You can't get too cute in playoffs.
Stop.
Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. You can consider yourself very lucky if you survived last week and Goff was your quarterback or Gurley was in your backfield.
Right.
I would say that anyone who had Gurley and had a first-round bye, they dodged a huge bullet because most teams that had Gurley last week went down. And the same thing with Goff. And Goff was a guy that I told people to be aware of last week. Cold weather, great defense on their home field. But now he's got the Eagles. I mean, Jared Goff is going to be my start of the week and start him and sit him among quarterbacks. Why? Because people out there get freaked out. He gave you a bad game last week. He's back at home. The weather will be nice in Los Angeles, hopefully, although there is the potential for some rain, but keep tabs on that. It'll be warm at least. And I keep my Rams in my lineup, no questions asked.
Jeff Wilson, Kenneth Dixon, getting a lot of questions about those two in your view.
Yeah, Wilson in his last game against the Seahawks, which was in week 13, had a monster game. A lot of touches, and volume is king in fantasy football. So Wilson is someone that I would trust more than Dixon, although Dixon might have the better matchup. I just don't know that he's going to see enough touches behind Gus Edwards to outscore Wilson's potential number. So both players are startable. Dixon is a deeper sleeper and as a potential flex. But Wilson, assuming Matt Breida is once again out, would be the play for me because I know I'm getting 20 touches in that game.
All the James Conner fans are coming out of the woodwork today to get your advice.
Hopefully you picked up Jalen Samuels. And I know that Mike Tomlin had said that he wasn't ruling out James Conner, so keep tabs on his status throughout the week. It would be great if he came back against the Patriots. But Samuels is a guy who we told you to pick up last week and even weeks earlier because you always want to handcuff your top running backs as you get closer to the playoffs. But he was targeted seven times, caught all seven targets. And so he is not only a guy who's going to help you in standard, but in PPR too, because of his ability to catch the ball. Remember, there's a platform out there that actually has him as a running back slash tight end, because he played some tight end in college. He shouldn't be a tight end in most fantasy products, and he's not, because he's only been a running back with the Steelers. But the guy can catch the ball out of the backfield too. So if you have Connor, Samuel's probably off the waiver wire at this point, but keep tabs on his status throughout the week. If it is Jalen, then he is at worst a flex starter and a good one at that.
He is the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, right there at the NFL Network, NFL.com. He joins us every week. A couple other questions, we'll let you go. Two of three PPR, Aaron Jones, Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry.
So Aaron Jones has a terrible matchup this week. Terrible. Playing the Bears. Mm-hmm. With that being said, and I get it, Derrick Henry had a huge game. Huge game. It would be hard for me to bench Aaron Jones. He's been so consistently good. And I wouldn't be surprised if this was a bit of a letdown game for the Bears. They got jacked up in front of their home crowd, national television. They played arguably the best team in the NFC, although you could argue the Saints are that. And they came out and had a big game. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of a letdown. So Henry would be the guy out of that trio, although I do like him this week. Out of that trio, Henry would be the player that I would sit.
Streaming defenses, Washington, Atlanta, Giants. Which one? Giants been playing really well, and the
Giants
Cardinals.
Defense, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Giants defense has played very well, and this week they've got the Titans. So I would tend to go with Atlanta, because if you look at the numbers, the Cardinals are the most favorable matchup for a home defense from a fantasy perspective. Mm. And Atlanta's definitely out there on the waiver wire, too. So I would side with the Falcons this week.
Lutz or Zuerlein on a kicking question. Nice situation to have there.
Number one.
Yeah, I know.
Why do you have two kickers?
Yeah.
I mean, they're both good, but like, why do you have two kickers? Yeah, Zuerlein is a guy I play every week. So, and Lutz is very good. But Greg the Leg is the play for me. And cut Will Lutz, please.
Anything else out there before I let you go? Because it's overwhelming with questions. I just want to hear from you. What are you seeing this week?
Well, you're actually seeing the big trend this week is you're seeing a lot of players who might not have otherwise been fantasy relevant all of a sudden having potentially big roles, right, in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. We talked about Jalen. We were talking about Damian Williams. We're talking about Justin Jackson. We're talking about Josh Allen. Dante Pettis is another player that suddenly has got a lot of value from a fantasy perspective, has scored a touchdown in three straight games. And the last time he played the Seahawks, who he's playing again this week, he had two touchdowns. So I get it. I always tell people don't get cute. But there's been a lot of injuries to a lot of big-name guys, and, of course, you have the situation with Kareem Hunt being a knucklehead. Mm-hmm. Now you have to lean on some of these players who maybe were on the waiver wire two or three weeks ago because of the volume that they're seeing either in the backfield or in the passing game. And, again, I've said this before, I'll say it again, in fantasy football, volume is king. So that's why I like a guy like Jeff Wilson this week. That's why you like a player like Jalen Samuels, assuming James Conner is out. That's why you like a guy like Justin Jackson or Damian Williams. Okay, these guys, their names might not jump off the board at you, but they're going to get opportunities, and that's huge right now.
Let you go off that. Appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
Take care.
There's Michael Fabiano right there in Los Angeles at the NFL Network and NFL.com. Michael Fabiano with us every week on Sports360AZ.com. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University Athletics. This is not going to be an easy interview to do because Shelce Hindman is with us. Their season is over. When it ends, as it ended for them, it's really tough. They won three straight to win the WAC tournament. They advanced to the first tournament in the NCAA Division I level. They lost in PKs, man, to UC Irvine, a 5-0 record against top 25 opponents. So, Shelce, I've had you on through the years. I can go back to the day that you were hired and all the nice things were said at the press conference. There's no easy way to put this other than this stinks, okay? I'm glad you're on with us, but to lose in PKs, come on, that's not fun.
No, it's probably the worst way of losing a match because you go the full time and then you do extra time and then you put it down in the player's hands. You have five kicks. We end up going to seven kicks. And unfortunately, the goalie made a good save on our last kick. And they went on to play the next match, and we came home. We got in a 5.5-hour bus drive and came home really depressed and disappointed. But as I always say to the players, you know, those PK games like that end up in officially as a tie. They just need a winner. So
yeah.
So for us, our last six games, you know, we had five wins and one tie, or maybe the last seven games. Gee, so we really did well. And that's the thing I want to impress on my players and to all the listeners is that, yeah, that was a really great season for GCU, and the future is bright.
What are you most proud of looking back on this season with this group?
I think, you know, there's a few things, obviously, that all of us as coaches are excited about. The thing that probably will stand out for many, many years with me, with this team, is their desire and determination not to give up. When I look through our season, you know, we have that there's areas in soccer that is probably the most important areas. Number one, scoring goals. You gotta be a team that can score goals. Number two, you gotta not let in goals. And for us, we didn't let in a lot of goals. I think there was only two games where we got beat by more than one goal, by two goals, and all the other games were overtime games losses or one goal losses. And so that desire and determination was always there. And our defense really got better. So we gave up less than a goal a game. And the thing that we couldn't get with the personnel that we had was a goal scorer.
Right.
I mean, our leading goal scorer this year, Jackson Jella, had four goals. If I look at Air Force Academy, for example, their leading goal scorer had like 18 goals. They had other guys on the team that had 16 goals. So you see the big difference. So when we were in games that were very, very even games, for us, you know, to get a shutout and hopefully pick up a goal, we were going to win. And that's the way things are going for us. So I think desire, determination, and the one thing that we always seem to overlook and how important it is teamwork. And the teamwork this year was outstanding. The players believed in each other. They played for each other, and they were proud to be wearing GCU colors.
Chels Hindman is with us as we talk men's soccer. The season comes to a crashing conclusion in PKs, but a successful season, I would think, on many, many levels. Chels, I look at sports and say it's not how a team starts, but how they finish. And if they finish strong, then it says the coach got through, the coaching staff got through to the kids. When did you feel as though that this team was going to accept and grow, because finishing as strong as you did in the WAC tourney and going to the NC2As and losing in PKs, it said that things did get through to this group.
Yeah, it really did. You know what? We started something last year that I thought would turn the season or the team around, and that was we established a leadership council. I took two players from each class, you know, players that I respected, players that teammates respected, and we met about once a week, and we talked about a lot of things about the team. How can we be better? How can we be a unit? How can we be a family? And that turned out to be their goals, you know, to be a family. And we showed that throughout the year. When things got tough, people didn't get down on each other. They just, you know, our attitude was just go out and work harder. And but things turned around for us when we beat Utah Valley at home in overtime. And then all of a sudden we had one of the best teams in the country in our conference coming in 2 days later, Air Force Academy, and we won that game. And it was just like, oh, God, here we go. You know, we're going to the conference tournament. We open up with Utah Valley. We win that game 1-0. We play Air Force Academy, who was idle, which means that they didn't play. They had not played like 10 days prior before we played them, and we had just played the day before. So we end up beating them 1-0, and then we go to the finals with San Jose, and we win that game 1-0. So, again, it goes back to we don't score a lot of goals, but we weren't giving up goals. George Osoris was an outstanding goalkeeper, one of the best that I've seen in the collegiate level, and he's already being looked at by professional teams.
He's just a freshman. George is just a freshman too, right?
Yeah, he really is. But he's a young man from Cyprus that did 2 years of military, and then we brought him straight over here. So he's a 21-year-old freshman. But he's outstanding. The defense was great, but But it's not just the goalkeeper and defense that wins game for you. It's the whole team.
Right.
And that's where the family bit came through. So the leadership council, we developed a lot of great ideas, and then we incorporated it again this fall. And whenever there were problems, players were sorting it out themselves, and they took responsibility and accountability about it being their team, not the coach's team, but their team. And I'll tell you what, it made the coaching life a lot easier.
A couple other questions, I'll let you go, and I appreciate your time on Talk to the Lopes. Shels Hyndman with us as we talk at GCU men's soccer. Individually, I have to talk about you for a minute, which coaches don't like to do, but you're at 499 wins, Shels. There's a punchline somewhere in there, right? Next year, 500 is going to come your way. Would you have ever thought 500 wins at a collegiate level, Lord willing, you're on the right side of the grass next year, that this would even be possible?
No. I will say this, Brad. It sure has gone by fast.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems recent, like a few months ago that I walked here and was introduced as the GCU coach. And this time has gone by so fast. When I look back at my career, it's gone by so fast. No, it's not something you think about. More people bring it up to me than I think about, quite honestly. When I think about somebody getting 500 wins, I'm thinking this. They must have been in the game in a long time.
That's right. And as long as that person doesn't bring up how many losses you have, right? I mean, nobody wants to hear that. What's recruiting look like for you as I let you go? What is the next steps in recruiting? What are you looking to accomplish in that space?
You know, we are looking at bringing in a couple of players that in our center back position, because we feel like we graduated a very good player in Sam Gardner. We will be picking up another player more in the attacking midfield. And we've got players that have committed to us, and we're just waiting to announce that. And then we'll pick up some other players that are versatile. You know, they can go in the attack or they can go on the flank midfield. We're still looking for one key player. One key player I think could really make this team a very good team. You mentioned earlier, we play some of the better teams in the country. We were so excited when we put our schedule together to get so many good games at home, like the Akrons, who just lost in the NCAA National Championships to Maryland. And we had them here at GCU, where we lost 1-0, a home game. Creighton, Wisconsin, Air Force a couple of times. I mean, we've played some really good teams this year, and we were able to match up with them. If we can get our recruiting right this year, I think we will have an opportunity to be, again, competing against some of the better teams in the country and finding some good results.
Good stuff, and I appreciate your time as always during the season. Shellis, sorry for the hard luck at the end, but a successful season on many, many levels. Thanks for joining us.
You're more than welcome. Thanks, Brad.
Shellis Hyndman there with us at GCU men's soccer. And that is Talk to the Lopes. We do it every week, year-round. Appreciate GCU.